Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and in this next half-hour segment, we're going to continue with our examination of German corporate control over the American publishing business, and behind those German corporations, what I have termed the Underground Reich, and the Bormann Flight Capital Organization. Now, this will appear to be utter madness to members of the listening audience who have not heard this before. I realize that. Contact the tape duplication service called Spitfire, which I will hopefully have time to give the details about later on in this side, and get a hold of some of the supporting documentation, because the documentation is there. In the first half-hour segment, we were talking about connections between the Bormann Flight Capital Organization and the remarkable Martin Bormann himself and the Thiessen firm, nay, Veronika Stahlwerke, one of the German industrial giants that grew out of the American recapitalization of Germany at the end of World War I. We then took a look at connections at Fritz Thiessen's perpetuation of Thiessen AG in the post-World War II period, his passing on of his assets to his heirs, Thiessen and his heirs' close association with Martin Bormann personally, and the association between the Thiessen complex and its heirs and the Bormann Flight Capital Organization. We also took a look at the Nazis' plans to go underground and how institutions and individuals who were to play a prominent role in the post-World War II Underground Reich were given ostensibly anti-Nazi credentials. We took a look at the creating of an anti-Nazi cover for the aforementioned Fritz Thiessen, and also the apparent creation of an anti-Nazi cover for the Bertelsmann firm and the Mohn family, in particular Reinhard Mohn, who very skillfully has directed the Bertelsmann firm in the post-World War II period. The Bertelsmann firm and the Mohn family enjoyed the good auspices of the Third Reich from 1933 to 1944, and all of a sudden were dissed on a slight technicality, suggesting the strong possibility that they were intended for post-World War II use. We also took a look at connections between the Bertelsmann firm and the aforementioned Reinhard Mohn, and a fellow named Dieter Vogel, one of Mohn's top protégés, who directs the Thiessen firm today. What we're going to do next is to listen to a segment of a pair of half-hour segments entitled German Corporate Acquisitions in the United States, this recorded in the spring of 1998. Now, in addition to the Bertelsmann firm, another prominent player in the American publishing market is a company called Von Holtzbrinck. And we're going to hear not only about Von Holtzbrinck's role in mainstream American publishing, but its control of Scientific American, and also the collaboration between Von Holtzbrinck and his firm and the Third Reich, and then the apparently sudden reversal of attitudes on the part of the Third Reich toward senior von Holtzbrinck, the founder of the firm, despite his post-World War II employment of liberal numbers of SS men, including one notorious protege of Nazi propaganda chief Joseph Goebbels. This segment, this excerpt of these half-hour segments, was recorded in the spring of 1998, and the full pair of half-hour segments, or the entire broadcast, is available from Spitfire. We're going to begin by taking a look at a very important article that was researched for us by a listener. The following, and once again, research credit to a listener, is from Vanity Fair Magazine's issue of June, of 1998. This is Vanity Fair, June of 1998. And by the way, for those not familiar with the publication Vanity Fair, it's by no means a leftist publication by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, it's very mainstream, and as I recall, it's owned by Condé Nast Publications. Not a leftist publisher by any stretch of the imagination, so keep that in mind as you listen to the following. This is an article, once again, from Vanity Fair's issue of June of 1998, entitled The German Front. And it's subtitled, As Bertelsmann Acquires Random House, the rival German media empire, the $2 billion George von Holtzbrinck Publishing Group, which since 1985 has bought Henry Holt, St. Martin's Press, and Farrar, Straus, and Giroux, is contending with disillusionment, infighting, and the owner's family's dark past. The author of this article is David Margolick, M-A-R-G-O-L-I-C-K. And by the way, in addition to those properties, Holtzbrinck also owns, manages, you know, they own Scientific American as well. Regular listeners to this program have heard about her discussion of the Bertelsmann Corporation's purchase of Random House Incorporated. Bertelsmann is one of the German core corporations, and by purchasing Random House Incorporated, they are now the largest English-language publisher in the world, and their sales volume is roughly double that of any other English-language publishing organization in the world. And bear in mind, that's Bertelsmann. What we're also going to hear about in this article is the von Holtzbrinck Publishing Group, which also is making major acquisitions in the United States. Once again, this article is called The German Front, and it reads in part as follows. America may never have been invaded by a foreign power, but without many people noticing, a crucial component of American culture has fallen almost entirely into foreign hands. Books. Of the big publishing companies, only three are still owned by Americans: Time Warner, William Morrow, and Simon & Schuster, and the last, perhaps, not for long, since the company is said to be on the block. By the way, it was eventually purchased by a British publishing corporation. I believe it was the Pearson Company. Continuing. HarperCollins is owned by Rupert Murdoch's Australian-based News Corporation, Viking Penguin, and Putnam by the English conglomerate Pearson. Everything else has been bought by a people who at one point in this century were more famous for burning books than for publishing them, the Germans. Last March, the conglomerate of Bertelsmann AG electrified the American literary world by buying from Advance Publications, which owns this magazine, the venerable publisher Random House, which includes Knopf, Crown, Ballantine, Fawcett, Times Books, Villard, and Pantheon, thereby vastly expanding an empire that already included the once independent houses of Bantam, Doubleday, Dell, and Delacorte. The purchase, for a reported $1.4 billion, made Bertelsmann the largest non-textbook publisher in America. It is now the publisher of such American literary icons as Norman Mailer and John Updike, and such commercial powerhouses as Anne Rice and Michael Crichton. But the German blitzkrieg of American book publishing doesn't end there. More quietly, but just as insistently, a second German media conglomerate has amassed its own considerable stake in the business. It is wholly owned by three siblings from Stuttgart who are nearly as mysterious in their native country as they are in the United States. They are the von Holtzbrinks. In American publishing these days, they are the other Germans. And skipping down, talking about some of the acquisitions of the von Holtzbrink Publishing Company. Since 1985, the Holtzbrinks have pumped at least $300 million into the United States and quietly acquired three of New York's premier book publishing houses, Henry Holt & Company, St. Martin's Press, and the most glittering jewel, Farrar, Straus, and Giroux. Already, Dieter von Holtzbrink, already Dieter has made waves and raised doubts in the U.S. by appointing a brash German publisher for Holt, Michael Naumann, N-A-U-M-A-N-N. Naumann's urbane style has charmed people outside the company, but his abrasiveness as a boss has driven out many in the upper echelons of Holt. And skipping down, about yet another key von Holtzbrink publication, or acquisition, I should say, also a publication. Then, for nearly $53 million, he bought Scientific American, beating out competing bids from, among others, English press lord Robert Maxwell. And again, that referring to the acquisition of the publication Scientific American. And by the way, there have been complaints since the von Holtzbrink group took over Scientific American that it's being dumbed down. The next section of the magazine article, once again Vanity Fair, June of 98, deals with George von Holtzbrink's activities during the war years and during the Hitler period. George von Holtzbrink was the fellow who was the founding scion, I guess you could say, of this particular publishing house, the von Holtzbrink Publishers. Asked about George's activities during the Nazi years, the family grows even more reticent than usual. The Holtzbrinks usually depict the paterfamilias almost as a member of the resistance, noting how, in 1938, the Reichspressekammer, or Nazi press bureau, had found him unreliable and stripped him of his license. One executive at Scientific American recalled how Dieter reduced his family's wartime experiences to the fact that an Allied bomb had destroyed the family home. Monica Scholler, S-C-H-O-E-L-L-E-R, to her credit, is more candid, saying that her father joined the Nazi party, but she insists it was a matter of survival rather than of conviction, and something he later rued. That presentation of George von Holtzbrink's Nazi party career is, as we shall see in a moment, altogether revisionist. In fact, George von Holtzbrink, was an enthusiastic Nazi and collaborated with the Nazis from an early date, and he then proceeded to give out-of-work Nazis, including at least one notorious SS man, key positions in his post-World War II firm. Of the reality of the Nazi career of George von Holtzbrink, as opposed to the sanitized version presented by his heirs, we read, Nazi party records show, however, that George joined as a Nazi student group in 1931, 2 years before Hitler came to power, and, according to the Bundesarchiv, joined the Nazi Party itself in May of 1933, only 2 months after the Nazi takeover and before there was great pressure to do so. He remained in it for all of the 1,000-year Reich, that is, 12 years. His, quote, unreliability, unquote, stemmed not from opposition to the regime, it seems, but from his wish to run his business free from government interference. Far from being blackballed, George managed to operate or own several publishing companies throughout the Nazi years, including one that produced books for German soldiers, a profitable enterprise with 9 million men in uniform. His company also published 4 Nazi-sanctioned magazines, with titles neatly capturing the distinctive Nazi argot, Freude der Arbeit, The Joy of Labor, Schönheit der Arbeit, The Beauty of Labor, Kolonie und Heimat, Colony and Homeland, and Berlin, Rome, Tokyo, a publication officially approved by the German Foreign Ministry. George's party ties were serious enough to be scrutinized after the war by a German denazification court. A prosecutor accused him of being a convinced follower of the National Socialist authoritarian dictatorship, unquote, and produced 2 witnesses from the book business, one of whom stated, quote, "As far as I can judge, von Holtzbrinck was a good Nazi, and above all, a profiteer who made a lot of money through sole management of various Nazi periodicals," unquote. And skipping down about George von Holtzbrinck's post-war career, we read, quote, "Holtzbrinck was not a Nazi war criminal, but he cleverly took advantage of a favorable economic situation," he wrote in a letter to me. The he, by the way, is Siegfried Lukatus, an historian at the Center for Contemporary History and Research in Potsdam, that, of course, in Germany. Beginning again, quote, "Holtzbrinck was not a Nazi war criminal, but he cleverly took advantage of a favorable economic situation," he wrote in a letter to me. Compared to that, the fact that he didn't give the Hitler salute seems, to me, almost meaningless, unquote. German publisher Klaus Wagenbach, W-A-G-A-N-B-A-C-H, believes that Holtzbrinck subsequently filled his sales force with former Nazis who, because they were ostensibly barred from the book industry, could be had cheap, a charge that Holtzbrinck spokesperson Arno Mahlert denies. Moreover, the man in charge of one of George's post-war magazines was a notorious former SS trooper who had once worked for Joseph Goebbels. So, once again, note that a major force now in American publishing is the von Holtzbrinck Company, not only founded and run by an ardent Nazi, but an individual who carried on some of his Nazi affiliations well into the post-World War II period. And bear in mind, this is as the Bertelsmann Corporation has now become the largest English-language publishing house in the world, and between the two of them, they will exert a profound influence on American culture and intellectual life in the future. That excerpt, again, from a pair of half-hour segments recorded in the spring of 1998 entitled German Corporate Acquisitions in the United States. Now, bear in mind the aforementioned von Holtzbrinck firm, again, an individual who was an enthusiastic Nazi, employed liberal numbers of SS after World War II, but who also had an ostensible anti-Nazi pedigree established, suggesting the distinct possibility that von Holtzbrinck had been tabbed as part of the Underground Reich. Now, just as is the case with Bertelsmann, Reinhard Mohn, that certainly is not the available evidence is not absolutely conclusive, but the post-war operation certainly points strongly in that direction. Bear in mind the overlap between the Bormann Group, the Thyssen, and Bertelsmann, and the information covered on the other side. Von Holtzbrinck, as indicated, controls Scientific American, and we're going to turn once again to the book Global Dreams, co-authored by Richard J. Barnett and John Cavanaugh. We used that book in our first pair of half-hour segments that was published in hardcover in 1994 by Simon & Schuster, and the ISBN number is 0-671-63377-5. And more about not only von Holtzbrinck's control of Scientific American, but beyond this, the complete domination of American scientific publishing by foreign companies, some German, some Dutch. Turning once again to Global Dreams. In the 1980s, a major share of scientific publishing in the United States was taken over by foreign conglomerates. Von Holtzbrinck, a German publisher, bought Scientific American. Elsevier, E-L-S-E-V-I-E-R, I may be mispronouncing that, owns Congressional Information Service and has recently acquired a number of other specialized publishers in the United States. This giant Dutch company, having acquired Pergamon Press, which is the British company Robert Maxwell used to build his fortune, specializes in scientific and scholarly publications. It publishes technical books and more than 1,000 newsletters and journals for communicating professional, academic, scientific, medical, and technical research developments around the world. Wolters Kluwer, K-L-U-W-E-R, another Dutch company, owns the venerable U.S. publisher Lippincott and has also picked up many other publishing ventures in the United States. In 1990, these two global publishing companies sold more than $2.4 billion worth of books and journals across the planet, just about equaling the sales figures for that year of the two largest American publishers, Simon & Schuster and Time Warner. Foreign publishers had taken over a significant share of the nation's scientific information industry, but this caused almost no stir. Hardly anyone outside the industry knew that it was happening. Now, this control of a significant share of the nation's scientific information industry by foreign publishers is indeed significant, in addition to Van Holtzbrink and, as we're going to see, Bertelsmann, two giant Dutch firms, Elsevier and Wolters Kluwer, to a large extent control American scientific and technical publishing. I don't know much about those two Dutch firms. I do think it is not unreasonable to ask the question about the possible connection between those companies and either the Bormann organization per se, or perhaps other large German corporations, given the preeminence of corporate Germany in the continent of Europe. Again, not definitive, but I think a reasonable question to ask. For those people who think my concern over the foreign control of publishing, in particular German and German firms connected with the underground Reich's control of American publishing, just imagine during the Cold War, can you imagine the United States allowing the Soviet Union to gain virtual control over American scientific publishing or to gain control over American English language publishing? It is unthinkable, and it constitutes a tremendous loss of sovereignty by the United States. Bear in mind that what educated Americans are going to know about the world, including World War II, the Holocaust, the Third Reich, and just about everything else, is going to come, for the most part, from German corporations. And what uneducated Americans are going to know about the world is going to come from educated Americans. And again, what they're going to know is going to come from the German corporate interests that I've already touched on, with their connections to the underground Reich, apparent connections, I should say, to the underground Reich, and beyond that, the Bormann organization. Speaking of the growing control of American scientific publishing by foreign corporations, we're going to turn now to the New York Times of Saturday, November 21st of 1998. This is an article by Doreen Carvajal, C-A-R-V-A-J-A-L. This is an article entitled Bertelsmann Signs Deal for Springer for Log, subtitled 82% of Technical Publisher Offers New Inroads into U.S. Market. And this concerns the purchase by the aforementioned German publishing giant Bertelsmann, again overlapping with Thiessen. Bertelsmann is the largest publishing company in the world. It bought Random House Incorporated. It has now purchased Springer Verlag, a German scientific publisher for the most part, but one with tremendous influence in the American market. Again, the New York Times, Saturday, 11/21/98, Doreen Carvajal writing as follows. In the article, Bertelsmann signs deal for Springer Verlag, 82% of technical publisher offers new inroads into U.S. market, it reads in part as follows. The media conglomerate Bertelsmann AG deepened its wide-ranging investments in books yesterday, signing a $1 billion German mark or $597 million deal to buy a majority stake in a top international publisher of scientific and medical books. The acquisition will allow Bertelsmann to make new inroads into the United States market. The deal is for 82% of Springer Verlag GmbH, Germany's biggest publisher of scientific journals and technical books, with its headquarters in Berlin and operations worldwide. Skipping down, the purchase is the latest in a series of highly visible acquisitions by the German conglomerate, which earlier this year took over Random House, the leading American trade publisher, and in October struck a deal with Barnes & Noble to participate in a joint venture in the chain's online bookstore. Almost 25% of Springer's annual revenues of 615 million marks comes from the United States, where it has a flourishing publishing house based in the Flatiron Building at 23rd Street and Broadway in Manhattan. More than 60% of the company's publications are in English. And bear in mind the von Holtzbrinck firms, control of Scientific American, and that passage from Global Dreams about foreign control over American scientific and publishing. Now, in that article, there was an allusion to an article that we've covered before in a pair of half-hour segments about German corporate maneuvering in the United States and also the progress of German fascism. That last article was included in those same pair of half-hour segments. This concludes the this article concerns, I should say, the purchase of 50% of BarnesandNoble.com's online business by the aforementioned Bertelsmann. San Jose Mercury News of October 7th of 1998 had the following article by Charlie McCollum, M-C, capital C-O-L-L-U-M. It's headlined, Partnership Creates Online Bookselling Behemoth. It reads in part as follows. In one of the biggest deals in the brief history of e-commerce, German media giant Bertelsmann AG will pay $200 million for a 50% stake in BarnesandNoble.com, the online arm of Barnes & Noble. The partnership creates a bookselling powerhouse that will compete with Amazon.com, which is by far the largest online bookseller. Skipping down, Bertelsmann, which has long indicated it intended to take on Amazon.com, is the world's largest publisher of English-language books. Its holdings include Bantam, Doubleday, Dell, and Random House Incorporated, America's biggest book publisher with an author roster that includes John Grisham and Michael Crichton. It also owns Doubleday Direct Incorporated, the top U.S. book club, as well as Arista and RCA Records. And bear in mind Bertelsmann's purchase of a 50% stake in BarnesandNoble.com. BarnesandNoble.com this past week concluded a major deal with Microsoft's MSN Network. The New York Times of Tuesday, December 8th of 1998, has the following story by Amy Harmon, and this is entitled, Microsoft and Barnes & Noble Join Forces, subtitled, The Software Giant Will Steer Net Users to the Book Chain. In a deal that may prove damaging to the Internet's largest bookseller, Amazon.com, the Microsoft Corporation and Barnes & Noble Incorporated said yesterday that they had agreed to weave together their online products and services. The marketing arrangement makes Barnes & Noble the exclusive bookseller on Microsoft's popular MSN network. Financial details of the deal were not disclosed. Again, bear in mind that BarnesandNoble.com, 50% owned by Bertelsmann now, which continues to increase its operations in the American publishing market. And bear in mind the capital connection now between Barnes & Noble and Bertelsmann through Bertelsmann's 50% purchase of BarnesandNoble.com, because Barnes & Noble has now purchased the largest book wholesaler in the United States. Research credit on the following goes to a member of the listening audience. By the way, I also want to give a tip of the hat to a member of the listening audience who sent me the book Global Dreams by Barnett and Kavanaugh. A listener got the following off of the American Booksellers Association website at www.bookweb.org. Quote, and this is a statement by the American Booksellers Association and posted on their website, quote, the American Booksellers Association, ABA, considers the purchase of Ingram Book Company by Barnes & Noble Incorporated to be a devastating development that threatens the viability of competition in the book industry and limits the diversity and availability of books to consumers. Skipping down, Barnes & Noble, a $3 billion company and the largest U.S. book retailer, recently entered into an alliance with the $14 billion media giant German-owned Bertelsmann AG. Ingram Book Company is the largest book wholesaler in the United States, with over $1 billion in sales to independent bookstores and other competitors of Barnes & Noble. And so certainly with capital connections between Barnes & Noble and Bertelsmann, this will give Bertelsmann influence, not control, but a certain amount of influence perhaps in seeing to it that certain titles do not make it to market or don't get advertised. I would note that BarnesandNoble.com had advertised the now out-of-print Martin Bormann Nazi and Exile opus by Paul Manning. However, many listeners have not been able to get it when they've inquired. I would not be at all surprised, given Bertelsmann's 50% purchase of BarnesandNoble.com. Don't be surprised if their accessing of Martin Bormann Nazi and Exile disappears. And again, bear in mind the connections between Bertelsmann and Reinhard Mohn and Thiessen AG and the connections between Thiessen and the Bormann Group and the establishing of anti-Nazi credentials for Bertelsmann von Holtzbrinck and the aforementioned Fritz Thyssen. All of that covered in the first side and part of it on this side. Again, the control of not only American publishing, but American scientific publishing by foreign firms, primarily German, with the connections that I've spoken about, constitutes a tremendous development. And just imagine during the Cold War, the United States allowing the Soviet Union to gain that kind of control. I'm going to talk about a book I've spoken about many times in the past. It is an obscure text, although one that I think is one of the most important books ever written. That book is called Serpent's Walk, authored by someone who writes under the name of Randolph D. Calverhall, C-A-L-V-E-R-H-A-L-L. It's published in softcover by National Vanguard Books. That's the publishing arm of the National Alliance, the largest and arguably the most important domestic American Nazi group, and the publisher of, among other titles, The Turner Diaries, the blueprint for the Order Nazi group in the 1980s, and ostensibly for Timothy McVeigh and his associates, plural, in the Oklahoma City bombing as well. That book is the ISBN number 0-937944-05-X, published copyright 1991 by National Vanguard Books. And there is an account. Let me read what on the back cover what this book is about. This pretty much sums the book up. The good guys win sometimes. Not always, of course. They lost big in the Second World War. That war was a victory for communists, Democrats, and Jews, but everyone else lost, including millions of GIs who were told that they were killing Germans and Japanese in order to make the world a decent place for their children to grow up, only to see things in America go from bad to much, much worse in the decades after the war. Even when the bad guys win, they sometimes grow careless and later become losers. Look what happened to the communists of Eastern Europe in the 1990s. Could the same thing happen to their erstwhile World War II allies in America? Serpent's Walk explores that possibility. It assumes that Hitler's warrior elite, the SS, didn't give up their struggle for a white world when they lost the Second World War. Instead, their survivors went underground and adopted some of the tactics of their enemies. They began building their economic muscle and buying into the opinion-forming media. A century after the war, they are ready to challenge the Democrats and Jews for the hearts and minds of white Americans who have begun to have their fill of government-enforced multiculturalism and equality. This book is about an SS and Nazi takeover of the United States in the mid-20th century. I have analyzed this book in a half-hour segment available from Spitfire entitled Review and Analysis of Serpent's Walk. I'm going to read a section of the text after a discussion of the SS building up a capital organization and go underground. We read the following about this SS corporate entity's operations. This is a Nazi named Rentsch speaking. About 10 years ago, we swung a merger, a takeover, and got voting control of a super corporation that runs a small but significant chunk of the American media. Not openly, with bands and trumpets flying, but quietly. One huge corporation cuddling up to another one and gently munching it up, like a great gubbing amoeba. Since then, we've been replacing executives, pushing somebody out here, bringing somebody else in there. And, skipping down, we have media psychologists, ad agencies, and behavior modification specialists working on image changes. Pay attention to these corporate entities that are cuddling up to one another and gobbling each other, and ask whether the serpent's walk scenario of control of the opinion-forming media isn't taking place. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.